Brad card. Now, does it change much the way people watch stuff? Not everyone's a political junkie. I don't think it changes much of anything at all by next November. But right now, not a bad night for Joe Biden, and he wakes up to some pretty good jobs numbers. Good morning, Brad.
Hey, Jack. Yeah, let's take your foot off the gas for 1 second and just think about what we were thinking, right? The Joe Biden exceeded expectations because he didn't fall down and he remembered who he was, right? Yeah. I mean, it's kind of sad that that was the expectation of a lot of people, is that he was going to have such a major fumble with his cognitive ability that he was going to be disqualifying. So that didn't happen. So that's a good day for the vice president, for the president. So that was a win for him. He came out a little fiery. It was a political speech, no question about it. Shocker, we're in a day of total politics, 24/7. And I think that he did what he needed to do. He was good for his base. I think he gave them a lot of red meat issues. I think he took it to Republicans, and quite frankly, I give him some credit where he called Lincoln Riley.
Yeah.
But besides that, I mean, he went right at and he responded to that, which showed he had some cognitive ability, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
He went right at Marjorie Taylor Greene on that issue. And he actually called the person an illegal, which a lot of the left hated.
Yeah.
But it's reality. The one thing that he didn't do enough was talk about the Southwest border. Look at
he
was very critical of Republicans for not passing the most recent attempt to pass a bipartisan bill. He didn't even address the fact that Republicans have already passed H.R. 2, which is a pretty comprehensive immigration bill, Southwest Border Protection bill.
Right.
At the end of the day, Biden did what he needed to do.
Right,
but
I agree.
Don't forget, number one, two, and three issue for this campaign is going to be protecting Americans from illegal immigrants coming into the country.
I agree with your analysis completely. It's what I felt watching it. Beat expectations. But on the border, yes, he went at Green. Yes, he held up what she handed him. But he created the current mess, and people know it. This administration created
Jack,
3 years
Democrats
of millions and millions. Right, right.
You
right.
take a look at, I mean, you have Kathy Hochul now deploying the National Guard into the subways of New York because to help address the rampant crime problem there. You have mayors of major cities in this country that are all Democrat run attacking the president for his lack of leadership on the Southwest border.
And Brad, you have states all the way to New Hampshire, Brad, a state you used to live in and work in as a state trooper very well, sending troops and passing yesterday in the Senate, Brad, a bill in New Hampshire, not Texas, not Arizona, to ban sanctuary cities. This is a top-button issue. Now, Brad, I'm not Trump, and I'm not the Republicans, because I think in a few weeks from now, this is ancient, this is history. He didn't hemorrhage, he didn't fall, if you will, he didn't screw up, so he kind of made some of the people in his own party say, okay, he's the nominee. However, if I'm on the Trump camp today, all I'm talking about is the border. All I'm talking about is Biden's executive orders and the millions of people that are here. That's all I'm talking about.
Right. If he came out with some kind of strong, if he reinstituted Remain in Mexico, that would be a huge win for Democrats, not just for President Biden, but would also have a down ballot effect for members of Congress who are just begging for the president to do something on the Southwest border that are in his own party.
But, you know, Brad, his own progressive side would be fuming at him. They're already fuming at him that he, for the dirtbag who killed Lincoln Riley, you know, illegal migrant with a record who killed her, disfigured her skull, murdered this beautiful young nursing student on the dean's list. You know, you can't have it both ways. And when you look at what's happening in this country, a lot of people, I've had enough. They've had enough. And so, you know, he is an illegal migrant. He came here illegally. And yet there are some people in his own party and in the Associated Press, and it was CNN when the story first came, didn't even mention the fact that he broke into this country through El Paso, Texas last year, I believe from Venezuela or wherever he came from. So unbelievable.
No question about it, Jack. I think that everything that you're saying is right, and I think that's where America is. I think if Joe Biden took some corrective steps through executive order for the Southwest border, it would go a long way for him.
Right.
He did call out President Trump many times to set that stage. We know where this election's going to go, right, on both sides. And Donald Trump's response back to President Biden is that he was incoherent, that he was crazy. So both guys have taken massive liberties with the truth.
And
so this is what we're going to be in for a whole election cycle.
Not to go
Not full bore right now.
And I may be wrong if it's Greek mythology, not to go far back, but if you go back to those times, the true Achilles heel for this administration and this president is the border, and that's what Trump should be focusing on. Brad, we have Senator Bradley coming in talking about that bill. I don't know if you're around. Text me your schedule because I'd love to get you again in the 10 or 11 to recap, because every hour now you're going to be able to get more insights. But thank you for joining us out of the gate. Brad Card Live, Card and Associates. Thanks, Brad.
See you, Jack.
Senate President Jeb Bradley. Good morning, Senator.
Yeah.
Hey, you're on the road. You had a busy day at the State House. You can talk about last night if you want as the Senate President of our state, a Republican. But I want to start talking about the Sanctuary City bill that you were on Wednesday talking about. How did that end up?
So it passed. It was a partisan vote. I mean, my Democratic friends defended legal immigration, but they have turned a totally blind eye to the impact of illegal immigration, whether it's terrorists coming across the border, fentanyl coming across the border, human trafficking. Sanctuary cities create a magnet for all this kind of behavior, and we need to stop it cold in New Hampshire. And so, you know, I mean, we had a long, long, long debate yesterday. It was passionate. But at the end of the day, I think what New Hampshire voters are going to take away from my Democratic friends, they spent the entire day defending bail jumpers, drug dealers, and illegal immigrants, aliens. I mean, it just, you know, and then to listen to the State of the Union message, you know, last night, where the Red Bull must have been flowing at the White House before President Biden showed up at, you know, the Capitol. You know, he was talking about potato chips and Snickers before he got to illegal immigration. All he's doing is blaming Republicans for the mess that he's created, which is why we need to ban sanctuary cities in New Hampshire, which is why we need to send troops to the southern border as well as protect the northern border. And guess what? Nobody's buying it. I mean, what you saw last night, you know, is a crotchety old man lecturing people, playing to his Democratic base that doesn't believe he's up to the job. And I don't think he won many independent voters.
The best outcome, Senator, I can tell you're fired up. The best thing, and I think Brad Card nailed it, and I think I kind of pointed out, the best outcome last night was he didn't fall down. He didn't forget where he was. I'm just being candid. And he probably quelled some of the dissension of the Democrats who weren't sure if he should be the nominee again. I don't think he did anything to gain independence. The progressives still don't like him in his own party, and certainly the Trump voters aren't going to vote for him. So that's about it. I think it's non-consequential in a few months from now because it was so political. And by the way, I thought of this morning, Senator. There's a good chance that Biden and Trump may not even engage in a presidential debate between now and November. So last night, what you see is the start of round two. I mean, this thing's underway already.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is probably going to be the most divisive presidential election in history. However, I'm going to say this. You saw Joe Biden on full display last night, angry and, as I said before, full of Red Bull, okay? Donald Trump actually has an opportunity to unify the country because the policies of the Biden administration, from illegal immigration, rising crime rate, higher costs at the grocery store and the gas pump, have really upset Americans. And people are saying enough is enough, which is why President Trump is leading in virtually all of the polls. So President Trump has an opportunity to contrast his policies with the failures of the Biden administration and actually grow his support.
Don't you love it that...
But he needs to have a message of unity because... Biden last night, for Joe Biden, who preached unity when he came in and became president,
Yeah. No.
It was awful. And here's another thing that really upset me. Joe Biden going after businesses and people that are successful in this country about not paying their taxes. Why don't you give that lecture, Joe, to your son, Hunter? Pay his fair share instead of being under indictment.
Good one, Senator. You had your oatmeal. You had your oatmeal this morning. And the other one I love is, don't you love the fact that he's coming here Monday and he took away our primary, but New Hampshire Democrats forgive him?
Oh, yeah. I mean, unbelievable. But, you know, it is what it is. Like I said yesterday, a Democratic colleague spent more time all the day basically defending bail jumpers, drug dealers, and illegal aliens.
So listen, Michael,
there's going to be a contrast this fall.
Michael Graham, New Hampshire journalist, I'm going to read you his question. Please ask Senator about Senator Chanley comparing Sanctuary City ban to Japanese internment camps and Jim Crow during Senate debate yesterday.
I mean, again, this is what I said on the floor yesterday, all right? My Democratic friends did a great job defending legal immigration, which we all support, okay? But they have turned a blind eye to illegal immigration and human trafficking, fentanyl coming across the border, the problems in blue states and blue cities. I mean, people sleeping in Logan airports. They have totally turned a blind eye to this behavior, to say nothing of, you know, the young lady in Georgia who was killed by an illegal alien. And so to equate, you know, illegal aliens to the Holocaust or slavery or Jim Crow, whoa, that's a stretch.
All right, thank you, Senator. Make it a good Friday. Calm down, calm down. Don't have coffee. Don't have any Red Bull. Senator, whatever you do today, don't stop at a convenience store. No Red Bull for you.
Okay, I'll take your advice, Jack.
All right, thank you. State Senator Lou D'Alessandro, leading Democrat in the New Hampshire State Senate. And I'm just going to say this because it's a Friday and I count my blessings once in a while. This is what I love about my show. We're able to have the Senate president who's Republican, now a Democrat perspective, respectfully, civilly, without the yelling and screaming. And last night in the State of the Union, you notice half the audience clapping, standing up, the other half. We are so divided. But Senator Lou, reaction to the State of the Union and some stuff in the last day or two here in New Hampshire. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning, Jack. Always a pleasure to be with you on Friday. Hey, Jack, our dear friend Brian Gripp.
Yes.
A little under the weather. So we want to wish him the very, very best.
Is he listening? Because I'm on top of this. I've talked to him before. He's doing great, by the way. He's doing great. He's on his mat. He's a great person, great part of our fabric here. So if he is listening, he's already driving his smarter, prettier, better half, already complaining about the Pittsburgh Steelers and their quarterback.
Right.
All right. Hey, Senator. Do you want to start State of the Union, or do you want to talk State Senate yesterday?
Let's do State of the Union first, and then we'll do the State Senate. The State of the Union, you're exactly right. I couldn't believe when the camera spanned the audience and people were sitting on their hands on one side and up and cheering on the other side. You talk about a divided group, and just unbelievable, really, really unbelievable. I just say this, Everybody, get off your hands, get off your tails, and get up and do some work. We got work to be done for the benefit of all Americans. Yeah. And boy, the task is there. Let's do it. Let's not just sit down and look.
Hey,
look,
I have
as
to,
if you were gazing into space.
I know.
Crying out loud. Listen,
it's just getting more pronounced. Senator, your friend Senator Bradley.
Bad picture.
He kept saying that Joe Biden must have had a lot of Red Bull because I think the president did a pretty good job delivering that State of the Union. I think Senator Bradley had the Red Bull this morning. He was all fired up.
Oh, really? Well, you know, Bradley gets fired up every once in a while, and he loves that. The Jebster loves it. I've known the Jebster for many, many, many years. You know, we served in the House together way back. Look, the Jebster's a good guy.
You know, Senator, we could do an hour, you and me, because it was about an hour at least. It went a little bit longer because it got going a little bit later. And the president, to his credit, milked the moment. He took his time. He said hi to a bunch of people coming in. He did the camera thing. He delivered. I think he beat expectations because he didn't screw up.
Oh,
I'm just being
candid.
But I think right. The net of this is you're looking at a general election where Biden and Trump may not even engage in a debate or two, which is sad. So I think last night you saw the start of this thing. I'm talking the final presidential general election. And I also think the president didn't make a moment of forgetting where he was or falling down. I'm sorry to say it, but that's the reality. I think he quelled dissension in his own base that he should be the nominee. I don't think he did much more in terms of affecting the outcome of this thing because, you know, we have months to go. But I don't think it moved independents that much, and certainly it doesn't move a Trump voter.
I don't think he moves a Trump voter, but I think he does two things that he had to do. He shows energy, enthusiasm, and a plan for the future. Now, those are very, very important as we move forward. Strategically, I believe it was the right move at the right time. And I know strategy is a very significant part of the political process. From a strategic standpoint, he did all of the right things last night. Now, you got to follow up with those things. Bringing the closure is part and parcel of the deal, and that's the campaign. But I think he's well on his way to making things to depth. So it's the road.
Here we go. Let's go back to yesterday. Senator Bradley was just on touting Sanctuary City, a bill to ban that, along party lines. Your thoughts, why do you think that's not good?
Well, I think it isn't good because we got a letter from the police chiefs of the major cities of the state of New Hampshire who said it was a bad deal, that they have spent time and effort creating a situation where people trust them, people have confidence in them, and there's people of color. I said there are 8 minority schools in my district, 8 minority schools. Those people have been incorporated into Manchester. They're part and parcel of the fabric of Manchester. And indeed, our chief of police has worked diligently to get the confidence and respect of those people. And it's worked. And this piece of legislation that passed yesterday, along partisan lines, does a lot to defeat that. And when the police chiefs come out and say they don't need this, they don't want this, we go against them. And you know how we are in favor of law enforcement. We're all speaking out very positively in that respect. I think we went against their best wishes. Not a good thing, in my opinion. It will hurt.
Listen, we had Manchester Mayor, the new mayor, Jay Rouet, on yesterday talking about he's being a very outspoken, saying your city where you live, you grew up, it's a big part of your district. He's now the new mayor. Desperately needs bail reform. And he had stats from last year. More than 4,000 people arrested by police, and I think almost 1,200 of those were out on bail as repeat criminal offenders for crimes just like the ones they just committed. He said they got to do something because it's getting really bad, and the crime is hurting the city. What do you think?
Yes. Donna Soucy has come up with bail reform legislation and has worked hard on this. Absolutely, we need bail reform. No question. No question about it. The statistics that you have quoted, that's the way it is. They've got to be changed. We know that. Bail reform essential. How it gets done in a bipartisan manner, that's the problem. You know, because you got the polls are so far apart, Jack. So far apart.
Yeah.
You got the Republicans who want one thing. You want the Democrats who want something else. Where's that middle ground that we treasure?
Yeah,
that's Senator Bradley treasures. I mean, that's where he's been for much of his political career. You know, he's the guy who has tried to mediate these disputes over and over and over again. Let's hope he's successful here because we need bail reform.
All right, Senator, make it a great weekend.
Jack, you have a great, great, great American day. Stay happy, stay healthy, keep the dream alive and well. And let's keep Fridays going.
Thank you, Senator. Kevin Landrigan, New Hampshire Union Leader, Senior Political Reporter. Let's start there. What do you think, Kevin?
Yeah, Jack, good to be with you. I think you're right. I mean, what struck me about this speech really was he spent a lot of time defending himself to the base of his own party. And I think it speaks to his standing in the polls right now, not just against former President Trump, but even among Democrats who have real concerns about his viability and being able to serve for the next 4-year term. So he was forced in this speech to basically take a lot of victory laps to the left. And at the end of the day, that's not going to help him in November, because those voters, if they're not with him in November, this is going to be a wipeout. You know, this is going to be Reagan Mondale. I mean, they're going to be with him in November. He's got to appeal to the swing voters, but right now he can't afford to, because he basically has to shore up his base. And we're seeing that certainly with respect to former President Trump at the same time during this primary campaign. He's throwing out a lot of red meat, a lot of very conservative proposals, and at the end of the day, those aren't the ones necessarily that are going to decide this election. They're going to be independent swing voters who really aren't sure about either one of these guys, right?
Yep. Kevin, let's stay on the Biden thing. Interesting. What can you tell us about Monday, the president coming here after he ignored our primary and basically took it away?
Yeah, this is part of the, you know, not apology tour, but political mending of fences tour, right? I mean, as soon as the president got more than 65% in the write-in vote and won the New Hampshire primary, he understood in a partisan way his DNC overplayed their hand, and now I have to do catch-up, right? So what does he do? He hires a robust staff already here in New Hampshire trying to win New Hampshire's four electoral votes. He meets with the congressional delegation at the White House and says, I'm really going to work hard here. I hope you guys understand. I had a position on the primary calendar. You protected yours, fine. And as soon as that meeting ended, the word was, and I'm going to come to New Hampshire right after the State of the Union speech. And sure enough, today's in the swing state of Pennsylvania. Tomorrow he's into Georgia, the swing state where Trump is going to be campaigning as well. And then Monday here in New Hampshire for a campaign event. So,
well, you know what? It shows you they're concerned about New Hampshire. I think Trump's aware of it, too, even though our electoral votes are slim. But, you know, Kevin, this general election's already begun. It's underway. They may not even do a debate, these two, which is sad. But you saw last night, this thing's underway. They're out of the gate.
No, it's true. And I thought one of his best moments, even though he screwed up the first name, was when he talked about the immigration issue and referred to that exchange he had with Marjorie Taylor Greene on the floor just before the speech, because that's right now that's the dominant issue in politics today.
And
Democrats are worried about this issue. Let's talk about that. Yesterday in the U.S. House, they passed the Laken and Riley Act, which basically says a migrant who has committed burglary or theft must be detained. The bill passed with 251 votes. 37 House Democrats voted for that bill, Jack, including Chris Pappas voted for that bill, Jack.
You know what?
Democrats from the blue states of Connecticut and Massachusetts voted for that bill.
And Kevin,
what does that tell you?
No, you're right. And I'm going to tell you this right now. He did a better than good job trying to defend a dismal, horrendous record on making this crisis as bad as it is. He's been at the helm for 3 years. That's why millions of people are here illegally, and we don't know what to do with them. The cities like New York, Boston, D.C., he's been playing word games with southern governors who are busing and shipping them up to places like New York or Boston or D.C. to show people the crisis. Now, all of a sudden, he gives a damn, and people see through it. He's got an Achilles heel on this one. I'm just telling you, a pretty darn good job trying to look aggressive and trying to want to be tough. He even called Laken Riley's murderer an illegal, which is hilarious because the far-left squad, I won't use words to describe them, they don't like that term because they don't think that's relevant to the murder investigation.
No, that's true, and that was off script, obviously. That wasn't in the teleprompter when he made that reference, but I think it does speak to how defensive he is on the issue and that he's trying to find an answer for it. And obviously, the first answer was the bipartisan bill in the Senate that fell apart when Trump said, it doesn't do enough, don't pass that thing. And as we saw at the State House, it's a primary issue there. Now it's up to Democrats in the very deeply divided House to try and stop this anti-sanctuary bill. And I'm not sure they can, because it's already clear this governor will sign it if it gets to his desk.
Yeah, we talked with Senator Bradley earlier about that. What else is catching your eye, Kevin? What are you writing about for the weekend?
Yeah, what was interesting to me as well, and you're going to have John DeLena on a little later, and this seems topical as well, the Senate passed several bills dealing with minimum mandatory prison terms for possession and distribution of fentanyl. And what was most interesting about this, Jack, was on two of the three bills, Senate Democrats went along with all of the Senate Republicans, including Senator D'Alessandro, Donna Susie from Manchester, the Senate Democratic leader, voted for two of these bills. It would basically create a 10-year minimum mandatory prison if you distribute fentanyl and it causes the death of another person, as we've seen happen tragically here in New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. It's obviously an issue that is very important, and as I said, it's one that is starting to attract some bipartisan support.
Mm. All right, we have John DeLeno, the DEA, coming up. Kevin, I'm going to give you an early out. Thank you. Have a great weekend. Enjoy today's weather, some sunshine. Kevin Landigan, senior political reporter, New Hampshire Union Leader. Thank you, Kevin.
Great to be with you.
John DeLeno, nice enough to talk and join us about the southern border, very much a part of the State of the Union address last night, even votes in New Hampshire. It is a number one issue, and you deal with it all the time in terms of fentanyl. But, John, good morning. Thanks for being back. John DeLeno with the DEA. Tell us about this lab, John.
Yeah, Jack, first of all, thanks for having me on. As you know, you and I have been talking about this going back to almost 2015. The fentanyl crisis is a crisis unlike anything we've ever seen before. And DEA is doing everything that it can to meet the moment, particularly here in New England, where we've been on the forefront of this fight. We were lucky enough to get some assistance from Congress, and we have decided to build probably one of the most state-of-the-art laboratories that DEA has, and it's coming right here to New Hampshire. And again, in an effort to meet the moment, rather than waiting for the lab to be built, we've set, you know, things in motion, and we have like a pop-up lab that we're dealing with right now. So as exhibits come in from around the state and really from around New England, we can get those things analyzed almost immediately. And I can tell you firsthand, without getting into the investigation, it's paid dividends already. We know that people are mixing fentanyl into all kinds of drugs right now. It's the ultimate shapeshifter. So when we see a mass casualty overdose poisoning event where maybe multiple people are suffering from an overdose or poisoning, we're able to get those exhibits examined immediately so we know exactly the substance we're dealing with, and we can target the right people to get them off of the streets, to get those drugs out of harm's way. Let's talk a little bit about fentanyl, Jack. It's a leading cause of death right now, drug overdose and poisoning in Americans between the ages of 18 and 45. More than terrorism, car accidents, cancer, COVID.
John, I have to stop you. We did that special town hall. Mm-hmm. Why isn't that a national lead media? Can you repeat what you just said? Why isn't that on CBS, ABC, NBC, Fox, CNN, MSNBC, all of them, what you just said? Can you repeat what you just said?
Yeah, Jack, so let me take it slow because, you know, when you and I get going, I get excited. Drug poisoning and overdose deaths are the leading cause of death in Americans between the ages of 18 and 45. It kills more Americans right now than terrorism, car accidents, cancer, and even COVID. And it's in all of our communities. The CDC is predicting record numbers right now for drug poisonings in 2023. And their latest estimate over a 12-month period, so for a year, it has 112,640 Americans dying from drug poisoning and drug overdose deaths. And Jack, I looked back when I first started giving these talks and talking to you in 15 and 16 in New Hampshire, the country was suffering 60,000 drug poisoning and overdose deaths. We're up to 112,000. And the other thing I'll say, Jack, is God forbid if the number continues to rise, if it's 150,000 or even 200,000, the Jalisco cartel and the Sinaloa cartel are not going to stop what they're doing. They have a synthetic-based drug. They get the chemicals from chemical supply companies in China, and they mass-produce this substance.
You know, I know you don't you avoid politics, but it's inevitable. It was part of the State of the Union last night, its reaction. I asked Senator Shaheen, and she's a leading Democrat on Capitol Hill. Now, you know this, big supporter of what you're doing. Should we, if we reach a point, John DeLeno and the DEA continuously to identify two leading Mexican cartels responsible probably for 98% of everything you just talked about, John, when are we going to declare them terrorist organizations so we can take the gloves off? And she said she'd be open to that. I thought that was interesting. But anyway, what's your role at the border? What's the DEA's role at the border versus Homeland Security, John?
Yeah, well, thanks for the question and everything you say. And I will say, you know, this is not a red or a blue issue for me. This is a red, white, and blue issue.
Yeah.
All Americans need to be aware of this. Right. So the Department of Homeland Security and the brave men and women of CBP, they secure our border, right? That's their role and responsibility. Ultimately, they're playing defense along the border, which is what they're supposed to be doing. What DEA does is we're out there playing offense. So we're on the Mexico side of the border doing our investigations at the highest level, targeting those two cartels. And we've made it clear the goal at this point is to defeat those two cartels. And we play offense on the U.S. side of the border in all of our communities. You know, what we do is we take investigations from the street to the lab. Right.
Yeah.
If it's a neighborhood in New Hampshire, we then take it to the next level source, whether that's in Massachusetts or wherever it is. And then if it takes us into Mexico, our goal is to bring people to justice in the United States. And that really is the one thing the cartels fear most. Right. We can seize as many drugs and they'll continue to make more. What we need to do is bring them to face justice. And we've done that consistently. Jack, there's a couple other things. When we first started giving these talks a few years ago, DEA, when we were doing our analyzing of the fake pills, the pills made with fentanyl, we saw four out of 10 contained a deadly dose, potentially deadly dose, which is 2 milligrams, enough to fit on the tip of a pencil. It's now 7 out of 10 pills. And Jack, we seized last year 78 million pills, along with 12,000 pounds of powder. So if you do the math on that, that's enough to kill 389 million Americans. What we seized is enough to kill every single American, and they will not stop, and they will continue to do it. The other thing we need to be aware of, Jack, is that social media, you know, all of these apps that tragically our kids are on these phones, my kids included, right? And this is why we have to have these discussions. Social media, they've become the superhighway of drugs. They give traffickers the ability to have instant access to hundreds of millions of Americans, potential buyers, through the click of a button. And what I'm most concerned about is it's mostly the youth that they're focused. And that's why they've really changed their business practice to make these fake pills, because they know there's less of a stigma around a pill than there is a syringe and powder. Now, we still seized 12,000 pounds of powder in this country last year alone. The other thing we're seeing a rapid increase in is American organizations, drug trafficking organizations that are working with the cartels based in the U.S. that are starting to try to buy their own pill presses. And the pill presses, so they can make the pills on their own. And these are pill presses. A tabletop pill press can produce about 5,000 pills in an hour.
Wow,
and a floor
scary.
Bottle
it's
can
scary.
Do about 15,000 pills in an hour. And if you think about, you know, how deadly these pills are, and you know, people talk about the pills, and one of the examples that we give is we call it the chocolate chip cookie effect. In the pill, you don't know where the fentanyl ends up going, because these are not laboratory quality, pharmaceutical grade, you know, pill presses and operations. So half the pill may contain, you know, 10 milligrams of fentanyl.
Yeah.
And half may have not, you know, there's just no rhyme or reason with it. So we need to continue to crack down on that. And that's one of the things that I'm really proud of that DEA is doing. And lastly, I'll say we're also seeing an increase. And there's something that the men and women of DEA, particularly in New Hampshire and northern New England, are concerned about, is an increase in methamphetamine. Crystal methamphetamine, again, manufactured by the same two cartels. They continue to push and drive supply versus demand. These aren't, you know, customers that are asking for this stuff. They are pushing it and making it so cheap.
Amazing.
And making it so available. And that's why we have to continue to talk about it. And you're doing a great job, and all of your listeners continue. And I'm so thankful to have the opportunity to come on to talk about this, because the one thing we can do, the one way we continue to beat it back, is to have conversations about this.
Well, I applaud you for your passion and energy. If people want to learn more, best website, best way. I know you had, microsites, one pill can kill. What's the best way to learn more?
Really, really quickly, DEA.gov/onepill. And if you go in there, we have so much material now, materials that communities and parents and anybody, educators, coaches, can use, download, produce and get out to the public. And as always, I appreciate the opportunity to come on. And when we do come back with the senator, let's do this again.
All right. Thank you, John. Thank you. Appreciate it. One of our regular contributors, Dr. Vikram Manchurmani, a.k.a. Dr. Vic, host of Navigating Uncertainty and author of the book, The Generalist. Good morning, Dr. Vick.
Good morning, Jack. How are you today?
Good. I wanted to get out those 2 points.
Yep.
The floor is yours.
So look, the big thing I'm focused on is the economics. And yes, Biden referenced it last night in the State of the Union, but this morning we had a jobs number that came out, showed more jobs being created than expected, but it was mixed under the surface. So under the surface, we saw that wages were rising less than expected, and the unemployment rate actually went up. So the unemployment rate went up, and that implies people are coming back to the workforce because they're not feeling like they can afford life. They need to actually earn more money. So a mixed story, the stock market has taken this positively, thinking this is likely to demonstrate, this is likely showing a weakness in the economy, meaning the Federal Reserve will have to start cutting rates sooner. So that's the interpretation of the jobs, at least as I see it. But look, I think the State of the Union, you've touched on some points, the economic point of Biden talking about shrinkflation is real. But I thought it was pretty funny because the truth is he created that dynamic. And so when you create the dynamic and then highlight it as a problem, you have to recognize that actually he was a contributing cause of that issue. So let me pause there and hear what you think.
Well, look, the economy is beating expectations, but there's a point that you just nailed. And I heard it the other day, and J-Dog may have to remind me what guest we had, but people's pay is not keeping pace of how much everything costs. People are, in other words, if you're working, money in, money out, it's not enough to pay for everything. That's where most families are at. End of story, period. You have to be empathetic. You have to be understanding and realistic to that. So it's not a rosy picture. It could be worse, yes. But the point is, you can talk about how much inflation has come down, but it's still a problem, and people are still having a tough time paying for everything, that family out there. And then they look at Washington, and they keep printing money. They don't care about the debt. And they keep the government open, but in our households, we have to pay the bills.
That's right. And Jack, let's remember what inflation actually is. I said this a ton during my campaign. I'm going to repeat it like a broken record. Inflation is a tax on the poor, working class, and middle class families of America, period. They spend more of their incomes on the necessities that where the prices are rising. Wealthier families in America that tend to have exposure to the stock market or own assets that go up in inflationary environments may actually benefit. So what does inflation do? It hurts the poor, middle class, and working class families of America while it helps those that are in the elites that are asset rich or very wealthy. So, yes, that's the problem.
Interesting. You know, the other thing, too, that I think we're not touching upon, in certainly in our region, I want to come back to a few things. I don't want to jump ahead to another subject. I was just going to bring up the affordability of housing. No one talks about it at a high level. And yet we are seeing a crisis where people, there's a whole different trend now of young people renting because they can't buy a home. I mean, the American dream used to be fueled by you work hard, you take out a mortgage, you pay your bills, you buy a home, you pay it off over time. That model's being blown out of the water.
That's right. Yeah. Unfortunately, look, and it's exactly for the reason we just talked about. Inflation took the price of homes up, right? Cost of materials, building a home, hard to get permits, hard to find people, all of that stuff. Cost of homes go up in terms of replacement cost. At the same time, because of that very inflation, interest rates go up. And so you create a double whammy that kills affordability and makes housing, generic, simple starter housing for young families, out of reach.
Dr. Vick, you have that socioeconomic background. And by the way, we just had one of our senior executives in our own company, Faith Francis, who's read your book, The Generalist. She actually gives you a good review. But Dr. Vick, you can now see, at least till the election, I know you can, in terms of economics. And I think we're going to see maybe a little bit of a slowdown, but not much, and a soft landing. The president got that right last night. So in other words, no recession coming. So this is it, the economy. But I think the reality of people not having enough money to pay for their everything and their credit card crisis, you know. So this is it. What issue do you see that will be the number one issue for voters when they look at Biden and Trump? I happen to think it's going to be the southern border. It's not going away. There are too many millions of people here to make this issue invisible. So what do you see for independent voters, not Trump voters, not Democrats who might hold their nose and come around and vote for Biden? What do you see among independents? Give me the top 3 issues as we head into September, October, November that will decide the presidential election? I know it's a big task, but I know you can do it.
Yeah, no, listen, I think you're right, Jack. Border, southern border, immigration, the major issue of the day by far among most people. They see it, they hear it. They, you know, the unfortunate events in Georgia with the illegal, I agree with your word there, that murdered the student. That's a problem. So that's going to be number one or two or three. It's in the top three for sure. The economy, always going to be in the top three. People's pocketbooks always matter. Do I feel better off or worse off today than I did 4 years ago? That's right. A question everyone's always going to ask. And related to that is what I would call just the size of government. Are we going to keep growing government and debt to unsustainable levels where we can see in the future forthcoming problems, borrowing from our grandchildren and our children's future and leaving mortgage payments for them? Or are we going to try to contain ourselves? And that has implications on what we support globally, what we do domestically, et cetera. So I would say size of government is an issue, and that might tie into foreign affairs and what we do globally,
right,
as well as the economy and what it feels like in my personal pocketbook and when I sit down at my kitchen table with my wife to figure out our budget, and, of course, the southern border and immigration.
Real quick, we got a listener just to frame a question from Tim in Hollis, and I didn't see this. I read something. Did the Walmart family, the Waltons, did Jamie Dimon, did Bezos – and even Zuckerberg, did a bunch of these folks and Warren Buffett sell a bunch of stock in the last month or two, like big time? Did they just cash out of the market, or is that a social media post? It's not accurate.
Oh, I have no idea, Chuck. Okay. I got no way to answer that.
The listener was just asking, why are they cashing out? Hey, listen, you have a great weekend. Check out The Generalist and Navigating Uncertainty. Who's the guest?
It was Tom Raffio this week. It'll be posted Tom Raffio got posted yesterday at noon, and you know, I think J-Dog's going to play it this weekend, so we should be good to go.
All right, thank you, Dr. Vick. And by the
great.
Way,
not,
thank you, buddy. Aaron Rial, NBC News Radio national correspondent. Good morning, Aaron.
Yes, good morning. And know what we can also focus on? Potentially the positive of not being manhandled by a TSA agent, because apparently TSA is testing a self-service screening system. They're going to roll it out at Harry Reid International in Vegas later this month. They're going to the top first and then just working their way down.
But how does that work?
They are hoping that this will help ease the burden on TSA agents in terms of, you know, shouldering so many passengers flying now.
Well, explain to me, because I don't. I know they have pre-check, but what is this sort of self-check thing?
Yes. So this will actually only at first be available to TSA pre-check passengers, and if you have pre-check, then you know that you have already opened your kimono to the government. They know everything about you. They ask you a lot of questions. And now you don't have to take your shoes off when you go through the airport. But those TSA pre-check passengers will be the first travelers to have this option. And what happens is you go in, you go up to a video monitor. It's going to provide step-by-step instructions. You complete that. And then you still put your bags and personal items on a conveyor belt to be scanned. After that, you take your things and you move along your merry way. So there will still be TSA agents milling around, kind of overseeing what happens. But this is an interesting one because it's taking what we've known for so long, what we've used for so long, and updating it. And for all the griping about TSA agents, maybe, you know, TSA robot is the next bad thing on the horizon. But for now, they're going to see how it works. And they've also said they are going to absolutely see if this works or not, if this is an issue, if there's going to be any sort of pushback, not only pushback, any sort of issues in terms of letting things on the plane that should not be there at all. This is just a trial period, and then they carefully consider if it's okay to move forward.
All right. Aaron Rial, NBC News Radio national correspondent. Thank you, Aaron. Cody Gregg, general manager of all the Goodhue marinas, the Goodhue Boat Company, Goodhue name. Check out goodhueboat.com. That's GoodHueBoat.com. Check out their deals, used and new boats. It's that time of year. Spring is around the corner. Setting the clocks, moving them a little bit this weekend. You lose a little sleep, but it's going to be light longer. Get out on the water soon. And, of course, their boat club. But there's a big boat show coming up. You may not even know about in Bedford, New Hampshire, the Northeast Boat Show. Cody weighing in this morning with some thoughts on the water. Good morning, Cody.
Hey, good morning, Jack. Great to be with you.
All right. Tell us about what's happening, what's going on. Great time of year to be out shopping and thinking a little bit, reduce the stress levels, try and get out on the fresh and salt water. But boat show as well, you're going to be there.
Yeah, we're going to be down in Bedford 15th through the 17th at the Bedford Sportsplex. And wow, I think the weather and the ice melting, like you'd mentioned, has gotten everybody kind of thinking about boating. So we're going to have all of our brands down there, and we actually have 250 pre-owned boats, because a new boat, you know, isn't maybe interesting or in the cards for everybody. And then I know that you've talked in the past about our boat club, which is another option to get, you know, to get out on the water if you, you know, don't want to deal with the maintenance and the insurance and the slip rental and all those things. You can join our boat club and use brand new boats for, you know, $250 a month, which is pretty sweet.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, all over the place, not just the region, nationally. Now, did I remember right, Cody, with Goodhue, goodhueboat.com, that if you go to this boat show in Bedford, there are some even perks when it comes to the club, or do I have that wrong?
Yeah, no, absolutely. In fact, down at the boat show in Bedford, we're going to have some deals on the boat club where you can save $2,500 on that initiation fee. And so that's the big news, I think, as far as offers and discounts. And, of course, new and used boats, you know, manufacturers have some rebates and things going on right now for Cobalt, Mastercraft, Boston Whaler, Sylvan Pontoons. Anyway, so great time, you know, great time to be thinking about what's the best way to get out on the water this coming summer.
Yeah, that's a phenomenal opportunity. And that's coming up the 15th. You'll be there. And, you know, it just feels like we're going to get an early jump on spring. Would you agree with me?
Yeah, totally. We, I think like most folks in the area, we have kind of an internal pool and a contest about ice out dates. And I think everybody's going to be way wrong because we've all picked, you know, our normal early to mid-April dates. And there's just no way we're going to have ice into April. So.
Yeah. All right, Cody. Great stuff. GoodHueBoat.com. Check out the club. Check out the show. Thank you, Cody. Make it a great weekend.
Thanks, Jack. Talk soon.
Rory O'Neill, you had it about right. You had it about right yesterday. People were looking for the appearance, the energy level. Got to give the president credit. For an 81-year-old, he nailed that. But take it away, Rory.
Yeah, but still plenty of criticism for some of the content of the speech. But I think the overall reception when it comes to the delivery was maybe a bit too much on the anger and the shouting side. My word of the day has been cantankerous, but that's really something I think was a message to Democrats to get them more motivated to show and to reassure those Democrats not to abandon ship.
And I, you know what's to your point or your own metric, I didn't know Biden could be cantankerous. So in other words, he did give a pretty feisty, cantankerous speech.
Yeah, Grandpa Simpson almost on display there last night. I was a bit disappointed, though, in the Republican response. I think that the Senator Britt was just, she had bad consultants doing too much work to manipulate what she was saying. I think had she gone on there and followed her own instincts, I bet she would have done better.
Yeah, you know, Rory, though, I think we go out a month or two from now. I don't think this has any impact at all. I think the Biden-Trump thing's already begun. You know, it's amazing, Rory, these two may not even do what you and I would call a sanctioned presidential debate between now and November. I'm not saying that's going to happen. I think it would be sad if they don't, but there's a chance they might not.
Well, we heard Donald Trump say, you know, he challenged Joe Biden to a debate already, anywhere, anytime. So we'll see if they follow through. I would just say, you know, Donald Trump may be having second thoughts because we've had this description, this ongoing, oh, he's sleepy Joe, he mumbles. He's essentially dribbling into a cup. But then all evidence last night to the contrary.
Yeah, I think what...
Let me say most evidence last night. Yeah.
All right, I'll save my comment. Rory O'Neill, make it a great weekend, NBC News Radio National correspondent.
Thanks, Jack. You too.